Ho, ho, ho. Who wouldn't go? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's also a wonderful life in the neighborhood. And my goodness, here on the Arts Alive podcast, we have Colleen Cherry and Jeremy Douglas, two of our arch creatives in the Tampa Bay area. And they are collaborating on It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play, which opens tonight in the Schoenberg Playhouse. That's in the Strauss Center for the Performing Arts over there in Tampa, Florida. Hello, folks.
Hello.
Colleen, you're directing. Tell me about It's a Wonderful Life radio play. It's been done a few times around here, but give us the gist of kind of what happens for those who don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I performed in this iteration of It's a Wonderful Life with American Stage 2016 through 2018. So we did three productions of it where I played Mary Bailey and Jim Sorensen played my George Bailey twice. So now he invited me to come direct this version of it. He was initially supposed to direct it, but wasn't available. And he was like, you know this show just as well as I do. Come on out and take the reins.
So this is a Tampa rep production.
This is a Tampa rep production, okay. Yeah.
It is set like a live radio broadcast, like what they do at Radio Theater Project, but it's the story we all know and love of It's a Wonderful Life, which was called The Greatest Gift, I think, and then became the Frank Capra film.
Yep.
These are people who are acting the part of radio performers doing a live broadcast.
Exactly.
Okay, and how big is the cast?
There's five people total, five actors and Jeremy, right? Is that correct? I think. Yes, five total. They feel like more because most of them, except for George and Mary, play all of the citizens of Bedford Falls.
Wow.
There's people who, you know, they are literally having scenes with themselves.
So you got Violet Bick, you got Mr. Potter, Uncle Billy, the gang's all here.
Yeah.
Now, there's a special, I'm getting to you, Jeremy, hang on a second. There's a special, he's so humble. There's a sort of special twist to this production, right, that it's not technically set in the 40s? Does it?
Yeah.
Help me out here.
So the initial script, Joe Landry's script, it's kind of a play within a play. So it's like it's set in a 1940s radio station. So the actors come out and they have these fake names as if they are these celebrities of the time. Mm-hmm. And it looks like you're watching a live 1940s radio broadcast of these actors doing It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
We decided to set it in modern times. So the actors are being introduced as themselves. Jeremy is being introduced as himself. And we're not going with for the period, the 40s kind of style with the costumes. It's all them doing it themselves. So It's a Wonderful Life is still set in the time that it's set in, but the little pre-show moment.
I see.
And we have some jingles written for our some of our sponsors. So we have a special little jingle for the Go Be Off Foundation, and we're calling the radio studio WTRT for Tampa Repertory Theater.
So you are, in fact, the composer of the jingles because you're a songwriter among your many talents.
Yep, and, so we collaborated on them. Jeremy's brilliant. I'll just sing something at him, and he'd be like, got it, and then comes up with the harmonies to teach the cast.
Not surprised to hear that.
It's a living.
You guys work together. You guys have both been with the Florida Bee Orchestra, which is Jeremy's project, but this is where I initially met you both, I think, was many, many years ago doing a piece on the Bee Orchestra when the Catalyst just started. Can we talk about the friendship that you guys have? I mean, you know, Jeremy, let me ask you as the... you know, as the George Clinton of this particular mothership, if you will.
Yeah.
What is Colleen? Colleen has an incredible musicality, I know that. But why is she a valuable member of that organization?
Colleen's a Swiss Army knife. She can do it. There's really nothing she can't do.
She's barbed, right?
Yeah.
She's got a spoon in there somewhere.
Right.
Probably.
Tweezers.
A little rocket launcher.
Yep.
All those things in my purse right now, actually.
Yeah, but before we move forward, the Florida Bee Orchestra is, you have the Buffy Fest coming up. It's in April?
April, yeah.
Can you talk about, I'm veering off here from It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure.
But this is the way these things work. The Bee Orchestra is such a beautiful amalgam of different musicians and singers and plus really great talents and plus the material that you do. Mm-hmm. Tell me why you put it together originally and what the vision was.
Oh, it's all ego. Like, really, just no. I put it together because, well, initially I'm a huge fan of Bjork. Yeah. And when I listen to music, I I fantasize about what it would be like to play with those artists, to accompany them, not be them, because I'm not, you know.
You wouldn't look good in that swan dress.
Yeah, I'm not a fool. But I do imagine what it would be like to be their piano player.
Oh, yeah.
To lead their band.
Yeah.
So, you know, one day I was driving to a gig, a wedding gig in Naples, and I was listening to Bjork, and I was like, I could do this. I could arrange this stuff for a band. And then the concept was, what would Bjork's music sound like if it were arranged for acoustic instruments? And then at the same time, I was also sort of leaving the live music scene and shifting over into the theater scene. So I had all these new friends, these theater friends, and the wheels were spinning. And then the concept became, what would it be like if I married all of my musician friends from the music scene with my theater friends from the theater scene? What could we all do together? And it just came out looking like a gigantic band with theatrical tendencies.
There is nothing else like it around here, and I think it's been a few years since you've done something.
Yeah, the pandemic put a hole in everything.
No kidding.
Yeah,
it's Buffy Fest. Explain to us what that is, both of you, and when it is. It's at the Palladium, I think, right?
Yep, it's at Palladium, April 5? Is it 5?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. April 5. So Buffy Fest, in short order, there is a television show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and in that show, there is a musical episode, and we are performing the songs from that musical episode with a 30-piece ensemble.
30 pieces?
Well, including all the vocalists, yeah. It's 30 people on stage.
How did you find all these people? I mean, Colleen comes into your... Jamie Perlow and the people that have been in the orchestra, you know.
They're all my friends from being in the music scene since I was 17 years old. I'm 50, so I collected a lot of them along the way.
You are what we'd like to call a musician's musician. And Colleen, since he said something nice about you, Jeremy has been working with you in the context of job site and theatrically for a number of years now. What does he bring to the table? I mean, David Jenkins can't say enough cool stuff about this guy. What about for you?
Yeah, he brings all the things to the table. Again, nothing he can't do musically. You have an idea, and he just takes it and runs with it between scoring the job site shows, you know, all of the things he does for the orchestra. Like, Buffy Fest came about, we were talking about it, and we're like, oh, man, I wish we could do the Buffy the Musical episode. It was just a conversation, and then someone got wind of it and was like, cool, we have funding for that. Let's do it. So, you know, it comes from weird ideas that we have, and Jeremy makes them come true and has the team of people to make them possible.
That's exactly what David says. And I'm thinking back to Misery.
Okay.
When you did the score that had like typewriter sounds, mm-hmm. and David said, all I got to do is say, this is kind of what I want, or what do you think?
Well, I think that was Paul at one of those typewriter sounds.
Oh, it was
sounds.
Paul. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Good to see you, buddy.
I love you.
And what's Alice? Mm-hmm. You did the whole score for that.
I did.
Yeah. So he sort of seamlessly fit into the theater scene, mm-hmm. which, you know, for him is great because, as Jeremy often says, he doesn't have to go out and, like, haul his gear around, play the piano until 3 in the morning, you know. But it also, it was a great extension of his creativity into another place that I don't think you even knew was there.
Well, I've always written, but never had written music, composed, but never had a channel for it, mm-hmm. you know, like a purpose. Like, hey, here's a song I wrote. Cool. And nobody listens to it. But now, you know, there's a show, like, we're going to do Macbeth, and I'm going to write like 2 hours of music for that. And everybody's going to have to hear it. So.
Well, you did Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Which, you know, everybody knows those songs.
Right.
You know, so there. What kind of creativity? I'll just say this as the Dumbo in the room. What kind of creativity goes into that if you're not composing them?
Determining the intent, like how the songs are reproduced. You know, do you want to do sort of the Alice Cooper record version of the movie, or do you want to do like what we wanted to do was merge, was do it the way it was originally at the with the Roxy cast, where it almost sounds like a gospel band, you know, where it sounds like the stick up the butt of the 50s coming headlong into the freewheeling 60s and 70s.
I think maybe that got lost over the years.
Yeah.
Too, because it became this, you know, this
well, because
thing
the movie came the and yeah. replaced all of it. And the movie doesn't do any of that. You know, not least not to my liking.
So it was a matter of arrangements.
Kind of. Yeah. More like, you know, like here is our thrust.
Yeah.
You know.
So in Gory Stories, what happens? I mean, does David sort of say, what do you want to do here?
Well, Gory Stories is written. Gory Stories has a whole book of music.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that.
But it's
that was all you.
No. Gory Stories is a play with music, and the music is written, but the music is arranged for an ensemble that we weren't going to use. We decided it was just going to be me doing it.
Yeah.
And David said, you know, we're free to mess this up however we want, and so we chose how we were going to mess it up.
With It's a Wonderful Life, Jeremy, you are what's called the Foley artist.
Yes.
You're playing little piano, I think you said.
A little bit here and there, yeah.
Little sort of tinkly stuff in and out of the jingle.
Accompanying them when they sing Auld Lang Syne or something like that.
Oh, yeah. So, but let's explain to the folks at home what a Foley artist is, what it is you're going to be doing.
Yeah, anything that makes a sound in the universe of the story, I recreate it live. So if it calls for somebody storming out of a room and slamming a door, I have shoes on my hands and I'm walking them on a little table and I have a tiny little door that I'm going to slam.
Is that fun?
Yeah, it's a blast.
Yeah, you know, we got like a car horn.
There's a car horn. Yeah, there's a telephone that rings. There's a whole other telephone just for dialing. There's some celery that I get to break. There's a big old tub filled with water. There's a wind machine.
Is that Harry Bailey falling through the ice?
Yeah.
Big old tub of water.
Yeah.
Oh, God. See,
Clarence and also jumping
off the bridge, right? well, what else do we have? We've got like this piece of parchment paper for crackling fire.
The bag of glass that you hit to make breaking the windows.
When they break the windows.
Throwing the rock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, what wish did you make when you threw that rock?
Yeah.
And that line was not in the script initially. I threw a couple lines from the movie that I love. So that little bit, the what'd you wish when you threw that rock? And just a couple little lines that after, you know, I've seen the movie hundreds of times, but rewatching it with this lens of like, which ones really stuck out to me is like, oh, that's important. I want to throw that one back in there.
Does George get to call Potter a scurvy little spider?
Oh, he sure does. And then Jeremy plays dramatic music underneath it.
That is so cool.
You know, we always say it's a love letter to Frank Capra's film. That's the story that we're telling here. We're pretty much recreating the entire movie just through the sound. So Joe Landry is the playwright who adapted it. I think he started it for his friend's like college production. A friend of his was trying to like come up with a holiday show and it just kind of took off from there. So there's just hundreds of productions of it around the country.
Well, the interesting thing too about the film, as everybody knows, is that the copyright lapsed. And so it was in the public domain for years and years. Which is where I first saw it, on the local PBS channel. Would run it, like, constantly. And that's
when it became the classic.
Yeah,
it was a flop when it first came out. It got terrible reviews.
Yeah.
Nobody liked it.
And it's so great. I mean, I'm going to watch it again, and I've never watched the colorized one. Thanks, Ted. There was a scene in the movie that I'd never seen before. It was the one where they take the martinis out to the new house in Bailey Park.
Oh.
You know, because they'd cut it out. For time on the PBS one, it was like, wow, a deleted scene.
Interesting.
You know, yeah. So,
and that's, I feel like that's such an important part of the story because it's showing the people that George helps. You know,
my God.
And like the Italian immigrants weren't necessarily popular back in those
days. Too,
you know? Oh yeah, we have. I put a goat noise in for that particular moment.
So it really is a love letter to Frank Capra.
It is. Yeah,
that is. Talk about your cast. I mean, I know Cameron Kubley, who's a wonderful actor, and boyish to the extreme. I can see him doing George Bailey.
He is a fabulous George Bailey.
So he just plays George, because George is a constant through everything. And who's playing Mary?
That would be Jalen King. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. She was in Rocky Horror with us. She was one of the Phantoms.
Yeah.
And she's studying at USF right now. So, you know, early on in her career. And, you know, she just really came into the audition and had really great chemistry with Cameron. And she's just really, she's bringing it. And she's a beautiful voice. So come early to the show, because Jeremy and Jalen will be playing a little holiday music before the show actually starts. So as people are walking in, they get some some fun Christmas songs, get to hear Jalen's beautiful voice.
And who are the others?
We have Terry Spann. So he is over in Sarasota. He's coming quite a long ways to come play with us, but yeah. He performs a lot with the West Coast Black Theater group mm-hmm. down there. So talented. So he's our Clarence as his main character, but he is the man of a thousand voices. He has so many different characters that he plays. So he plays Mr. Martini. Mm. He plays different characters in Bedford Falls, and he's so funny and just brings such a wonderful charm to Clarence.
So it's just, is it just those?
Nope, we have Michael Gregory. So
you got more people.
We
come
got
on.
Even more people, yeah. So Michael Gregory, he has the hardest part in the show, I think, and the most fun, because he's playing sort of our host, our MC of the radio station.
And then he becomes part of
it. And then he becomes Potter, Billy, Peter Bailey, the father, and a slew of others. But there is a scene where he's just playing those three characters having a conversation with himself early on in the play. And it's just so much fun to watch him go from these different characters. He's got different physicality and voices for each. And then we have Kelsey Painter, who she's new to town. She was living in Maryland, I believe, before this. So moved to the area kind of recently within the last few years and just blew us away in the audition. Just so, so funny. So she is Violet Bick.
Oh, yeah.
She is George. His mom. She is so many different characters. She plays little Zuzu. She has the sweetest voice for Zuzu with the, look, daddy.
Zuzu's petals.
Zuzu's petals. She gets to say
paste
that.
It.
Paste it, daddy. Like, she's so, so funny and so, like, just brings up that imagery of the little girl sick in bed.
I know what I'm doing this weekend. I'm watching the movie again. Let's talk about, Colleen, let's talk about the reason you think this is such an evergreen with people. You know, as you say, it really didn't do so great in the 40s, and mm-hmm. I think Stewart and Donna Reed probably almost forgot about it as their careers went on. And then it sort of became this thing later in life. Why does this resonate with Americans?
I think it didn't resonate initially because I think it came out in 1949. It's too soon. You know, they talk about the Depression. They talk about the war. I think it was too soon for people. Mm. And, you know, cut to 20 years later, it's a little bit more nostalgic. But, you know, Capra kind of has that, you know, you conjure the like, oh, it's this sweet saccharine kind of story. It's not. It's kind of dark, right? It's George thinking about it's that fear of missing out, right? Constantly fighting his fate and trying to get out of his hometown and the circumstances that he's in, but and not realizing all of the beauty and the good that he does for his community until divine intervention comes along. But there are other characters in the play, like his mom and Mary, who do recognize it all and try to ground him. But I think a lot of people can relate to that, of that, like, am I on the right path? I don't have a big house. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have this high-powered career.
I think a lot of us can relate
right.
to that.
Right. And especially, like, gosh, these days, you know, with the economy the way it is and, you know, everything going on in the world, I think having something like this that reminds us that community is what it's all about, that you look around at the people's lives that you touch and them lifting you up in your time of need. So I wrote my director's note last night, so have all these ideas about that.
Okay.
I started with...
You heard it here first.
You'll appreciate this, that I keep going back to the John Lennon lyric that I love, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
Yeah.
That's what happens to George, right?
Beautiful boy. What a great song.
And he almost misses out on all of the beautiful life that he's created right there in his community and the good that he does for them and the gifts that they give to him in return in his time of need.
I'll tell you, every time Harry says to my big brother, George, the richest man in town, I mean, I lose it.
Oh, me too. I'm getting teary. I just thinking of it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Man. Jeremy, what's next for you? You're going on to Macbeth.
Yeah. I'm going to make a whole score for it.
This is job site in January, I think?
Yeah.
Okay. What does that mean, make a whole score for it?
Well,
it's not like you can tap the world, you know, the Scottish theme, or, you know, you got to create all new stuff.
Well, we have a set and a setting in mind. We have a new technical director coming on designing the set, and his ideas are ambitious, and so I have to follow suit. So I'm going to pre-record a score for the show, but I have this special method of pre-recording shows where it sounds like a live musician or, you know, a live ensemble is accompanying, reacting to the scene as it develops.
You do sound design as well, though, so you would mm-hmm. be there running the cues and stuff while the show is
going? Nope. The stage manager will do that.
You get to sit home and say,
I get to sit at home.
The show went well.
Well,
guys.
I show up for like tech rehearsals and make sure the stage manager is doing it the right way. Like, yeah.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it's nice.
Because, I saw your gory stories. You got makeup on and all that. You're sitting out there.
I know. That was
our skin is still recovering.
I still have white boogers for that.
Ooh, white boogers. What?
Yeah, white boogers. That's my band name.
What about for you? What's next?
Oh, a nice little break. I have been going nonstop since Rocky Horror, essentially.
Yeah.
It has been,
it's been back to back.
And I just bought a house earlier this year, 2 days before the hurricanes.
No, Jeremy was telling me earlier, and you don't live that far from me.
Oh, so very cool.
We're in the same sort of universe.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to having a little rest before the projects pick up again in 2025. Oh, yeah. So we've got Buffy Fest coming up, a couple other things that might be happening, and then the big show that I have scheduled is Puffs with Jobsite. So that's going to be in the Jabe next year. It is about the Hufflepuffs.
Oh, okay. You have to explain that. That went right over my head.
So it is about we can't say the technical names because the author of the books is quite litigious. But it's a certain boy wizard. A story about a certain boy wizard. Are you familiar?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His name's Frodo, I think.
Something like that. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
It is if you're fans of that certain book series, you're going to love this very silly send-up.
Good hint making there, Colleen.
Absolutely. So that's coming next summer that Cameron Coobley is going to be starring in. Excited to get to work with him so soon again.
He was so good in Mr. Rosewater over there at Freefall, mm-hmm. and also in that Charlie Brown thing.
He was such a good Charlie Brown.
He was perfect. He was. I like Cameron a lot, and he's a lawyer too, so go figure. Yeah, he's one of the good ones.
We put that in his intro, so that when the actors come out, they have little intros. So he's a lawyer by day, an actor by night.
We are talking about It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. It opens tonight in the Schimburg Playhouse. That is in the Strauss Center for the Performing Arts, and you can go online and find tickets. It's there till the 23rd. You're doing a lot of shows.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the sort of thing where, we anticipate, we're going to get a lot of folks.
We sure hope so. The holiday season, I feel like people are always looking for something to do with their families. So this is family friendly, bring them all. I think even little kids can be pretty entertained, especially watching Jeremy doing his thing.
Oh, sure.
And the actors bringing it at the microphone. So it really just, it gives you that holiday warmth that warms your heart.
And it's a Tampa Repertory Theater production, so shout out to Amelia and to Jim Sorensen and that mob over there. Jim usually does George Bailey. Hasn't he done it a whole bunch of times?
He's done it. He did it twice with me, at least.
Yeah.
He's done it. He's very familiar with the show. So he's actually doing our set design, providing all of the Foley props and things like that, and producing it as well. So
fantastic.
He's very involved.
I had the ladies from the Christmas Park, the Trailer Park musical in here, and we were talking about this sort of spirit of cross-pollination that seems to be happening now. Because their Stageworks is going to do When the Righteous Triumph over in the Jabe.
Yeah.
Think Tank was in Free Fall, and I can't even think about all the cross-pollination. Now, you guys, I associate with Jobsite. Now you're doing a Tampa rep thing. I think this is really healthy, don't you, for the theater community?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there have been periods where I've been on payroll at every theater in town, either like administrative or I bartend at Freefall. You'll see me behind the bar and working at the different companies. So, I don't like to be pigeonholed just to one. Like, we're artistic associates with Jobsite, so of course we're there primarily. But, I love working with different companies and especially all the actors, most of the actors in this show, I think with the exception of Cameron, are brand new to Tampa Rep. So that's really exciting.
That's very, very cool.
Have all new people, new faces.
So It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play featuring Jeremy Douglas on Foley. I was going to call you Jeremy Foley there for a minute.
Jeremy Foley Douglas.
And directed by Colleen Cherry, who also wrote the fabulous Tampa Bay jingles in this live radio show. That starts tonight, as I've said numerous times, in the Schimburg Playhouse in the Strauss Center for the Performing Arts, running through the December to the 23rd. Guys, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
We wish you broken legs all around and happy holidays and all that stuff.
You too.
You too.